All right, theology of work, really part three, but part two on the principles of working. And so we worked our way through. It says, slaves, this is Colossians 3:22, in all things obey those who are your masters on earth, not with external services as who merely please men, but with sincerity of heart, fearing the Lord. Whatever you do, do your work heartily as to the Lord rather than for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance. It is the Lord Christ whom you serve. For he who does wrong will receive the consequences of the wrong that he has done without partiality. You could go to the next chapter 4, verse 1. Masters, grant to your slaves justice and fairness, knowing that you too have a master in heaven. So we worked our way through the first part of that, really kind of talking through a little bit the nature of what kind of slavery is being discussed there, and the fact that we are not under slavery in our workforce today. Although there is a sphere, in essence, what's happening, it's kind of a lesser to the greater argument, that is, or really greater to the lesser, I guess, if you have to obey even as a slave, in the worst possible circumstance, someone owns you, if you are required to honor the Lord in your work, then certainly anything that's easier than that, you ought to be honoring the Lord in. And there's a sphere of influence that an employer has within his realm of authority that, in one sense, that's absolute authority, as it were. It's kind of like the governmental authority. They have certain realms in which that, I mean, that's, in essence, it's absolute authority. It's granted by the Lord. And you can't say, well, because I don't want to do that, or because, you know, I don't like doing that, you got to pay your taxes. Well, to evil governments, yes, you do. That, I mean, that's how that works. So there is a sphere which is, you can't come out from underneath that. Well, the nice thing for most of you is that the employer sphere, you can come out from underneath when you go home, and you can choose another job, right? You can do those sorts of things. But again, to most of the people that Paul was talking to, they didn't have any choice. You were going to do that the rest of your life. So what a blessing that we don't have to do that, and how much better should our work be? How much more should we be able to honor, even for a temporary time when we're under their sphere, the employers or employers that we have? So, and that's my prayer, is that you will learn how to do that. And Fede asked a good question last time, which is, it's kind of like government. How is it that we do good things for a bad government? Well, really, we're treating that government in the ideal. The government is supposed to do certain things. I mean, that's true. All right, they're supposed to reward what is good and punish what is evil. And so we are, even when they're not doing that, we are supposed to respond to them as in that sphere. So employees are the same way, that many of them are not honest, fair, just. They are backbiters. They are maybe horrible managers. But our goal, we're supposed to be treating them, because we're doing it for the Lord, we treat them in light of what in one sense, what they ought to be. And then we let the chips fall where they may, because the Lord's the one that does what? Works with them. Same way with the government. We do what we ought to be doing, even when they're not doing what they're supposed to do. We let the Lord deal with them, because he doesn't say, you know, don't you may not, must not obey a government that isn't rewarding good. He says you still have to do what you have to do, and I'll deal with the government. Well, the Lord will deal with your employers as well. So that's how we're viewing that. How can I make a bad employer look good? Well, because you're doing that before the Lord. It's not to exalt their badness. It is simply to say, this is how I respond to employers. It wouldn't matter who you are. And I'm going in that sense to exalt or to lift you up in your role. It's the same way with a wife with a husband who's wrestling to honor the Lord. What does she do? Does she say, well, I don't respect you, and you get no respect. I'm not going to do anything which makes you look good or which honors you. No, she's still in her proper sphere. She respects and honors him, even when he's being disobedient to the word. Why? Because that's the role that he has. So that's where we're at, and it's a really important thing to remember.
It's important to remember the sovereignty of God.
Yeah, yes.
God put that person who's your boss, who's not a good guy.
Right there for you.
You need to consider, do I have something to learn from God through this relationship?
And you always do.
And do I have some service to perform through this relationship?
Yes.
Et cetera, et cetera.
Yep. And notice that he says, I love the phrase. He goes, honor those or obey those who are your masters on earth. He doesn't make a very clear distinction. He's not saying this is some kind of, you know, in obeying them, they are God. He's simply saying they're your earthly masters. And what's the idea there? That God has placed them there. He places all earthly authority. That's what God does. You know, it's Jesus standing before Pilate. He goes, I have authority over you. Jesus says, yeah, you do. But it's granted to you by heaven. There's kind of a very strong implication there. You're not properly living out your authority. You don't understand where your authority comes from, but you're right. I'm underneath yours. And as holy God and fully man, that was his. He was coming underneath that authority. What's similar for us? These are our masters on earth. Right? All earthly authority gains its legitimacy from heavenly authority. And, as is implied here, the earthly masters are not the true masters then, right? For a believer, because Christ is their true master. And Romans 13:1 says a similar thing. Every person is to be in subjection to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God. And those which exist are established by God. Now, this is hard for us. It's a hard pill to swallow, because there's no such thing as certainly perfect government authority, and really there's no such thing as good, intrinsically good government authority, because there's unbelievers in power. I mean, in almost every circumstance. And so you're looking at this going, wow, God establishes even that? Yes, he does.
Well, like you mentioned before, David and Saul, I mean, Saul was trying to kill David.
That's right. And he was disobedient to the Lord. The Spirit had been removed. I mean, all of these things. And David's saying that authority was established by God, and it's not up to me to remove it. It's a very powerful thought. And it's not something that's super popular. It's never popular. The idea that you would just wait upon the Lord in that sense, because God established that authority. It is a very powerful picture. And you're like, ooh, that would be hard for me to do. Well, yes, and when you just work it down to the sphere of work authority, how many problems would be solved if every time you went to work, you're like, wait, okay, this authority here, I wrestle, I'm struggling, but the Lord has placed this authority over me. It is his authority, because it would totally change your perspective every time you go to work, and even as you're thinking about work. Now, the Lord has placed that person, that man or that woman, there, and it's his authority then. And so therefore, I can with joy come underneath it, because I know, again, I'm not exalting their badness or the fact that they're doing a bad job. Guys, that's not up to you. What's up to you is to say, no, that authority is from the Lord, and so I'm going to come underneath it to do my very best to whatever they ask me to do that isn't illegal or immoral. I'm going to do that. And guys, again, for the vast majority of, and particularly starting out, if I could get young people to understand this, they would save so much grief throughout their lives, a lack of contentment, where they're just constantly, I don't like this and I don't like this. You know, you can talk about the things that you don't like or that aren't great, but you can't lack contentment for those things. My son and I just have had, it's really been very sweet as he started working at Chick-fil-A pretty much. That was kind of his first job. I mean, fast food, it doesn't matter how good the fast food is. I mean, talk about bad managers. I mean, you're just asking for it. I mean, these guys, they don't know what they're doing. I mean, I was one. it's almost not their fault. It's like they've been raised up they're overseeing. I mean, it's pretty, a lot of people. And you've got someone who, I mean, they have no idea what they're doing. I mean, they're supposed to be trained. And to just teach, and everyone else at his workplace constantly harping on this manager's bad, that manager's bad. But I said, just wait for a minute. So he's there for a couple months. I said, I just want you to watch what happens when the next manager comes along and see if there's any difference in the employees. None. Next one, none. New owner, none. It doesn't matter who it is. And when they're better, okay, they recognize they're a little bit better. But it goes back instantly to the complaining, the griping, the backbiting. And I said, you want to do one thing. You want to position, because you're honoring the Lord, you want to position yourself where you are, you always have the manager's back. Always. I don't enter into those discussions about how bad the manager is. I mean, I can acknowledge that, you'd be fine to acknowledge, I don't think that's good. That's maybe not the best way to do that. But I want you to know that I'm here to do what this particular manager says. He's now been there for almost 4 years. He's seen almost everybody in the entire store come and go, and he is still there. And he is able to make more money than most of them who are there simply by the fact that he has stuck it out and not entered into those things. So it's just starting out. And believe me, it wasn't like he did that automatically, and I didn't when I began. But it's not related to their worthiness. It is related to what the Lord would have. And 1 Peter makes that clear. We might have done this verse last time, did we? Servants, be submissive to your masters with all respect, not only to those, I mean, if you're just thinking in your head, how could I possibly be submissive to someone who isn't good? Not only to those who are good and gentle, but also to those who are unreasonable. For this.
The sincerity of heart here is what speaks to me as a person.
Right.
Is what is your attitude in where you are,
right,
in the fearing of God and the placement of your position where you're at heart at this time? Sincerity of heart speaks to everything in all situations.
That's right. And that's where we're headed as we move through this. Because it says, for this finds favor. This is speaking to Ray's point. For this finds favor. I mean, just think how radical this. If for the sake of conscience towards God, Not because you're forced, not because you're mad, not because, if for the sake of conscience towards God, a man bears up under sorrows when suffering, how? Unjustly. You are actually gaining more. And it doesn't mean you have to stay there all your life. I'm gaining more because this guy is so evil. You know, you're not stuck there, but you have something to learn, and you are, in fact, gaining more. Man bears up under sorrows when suffering unjustly, for this finds favor. For what credit is there if when you sin and are harshly treated, you endure with patience? You're a bad employee, you show up late, they're all over me. Well, yeah, they are. And they ought to be.
A good example of honoring those who are just unreasonable. The, I don't know if any of your... If y'all saw the movie Torture for Christ about Richard Warmbrand, the guy came in every day. You can't pray here. You can't pray here. And he would be beaten every day. And finally he came and says, "We've arrested your wife. We've targeted your church member. We've done this. There's nobody else for you to pray for. Who are you praying for?"
Well, I'm praying for you.
This is the guy that beat him every day.
Right.
And the expression on the guy's face was unbelievable when he realized, this guy loves me.
But if when you do what is right and suffer for it, you patiently endure it, this finds favor with God. And again, it doesn't speak to, you know, again, you have to stay there all the time or you could never make a change. But you would want to learn yourself, and you'd want to teach your children and those you're discipling that no, you need to stay there and deal with that to the point where your heart is content, and where you can say, no, I can rejoice to be here. It would just be such a blessing if they could learn to do that, because then they are protected. They can go anywhere. I mean, you're gonna go to the next place, and then you have to learn that again and again. No, learn it here before you go to the next place, and then if it's better, great. But you're probably going to find that it's not all that much better, because people are sinners. The best of companies, the best of places. And not only that, maybe it's great when you got there. And then what happens? Leadership turnover. And the guy comes in, he's a terror. He's a despot. You're like, ah. So learn it now and continue to learn it. Yes.
We have two great examples in Daniel and Joseph.
Think about working for people that are, and particularly Daniel. Actually Potiphar, I'm sure, was a tyrant of some sort, but who works under all these ungodly governments, 70 years, all right? And in and out. I mean, Nebuchadnezzar, he was an ungodly guy. I think he got saved, but that's another discussion. But then all these other guys, and he managed to make it there, honoring and pleasing the Lord that entire time. And he wasn't like, this is an ungodly government. I can't serve this government. No, he did what he was supposed to do. The next administration comes in. What? There he is, continuing to faithfully serve the Lord. It would be the work. This work is very simple.
Isn't it funny how in our last two administrations in our country, everybody's had an opportunity. Either you hated Obama or you hate Trump.
Right.
You get an opportunity, no matter who you are.
That's right. To learn and to deal with. I mean, absolutely. Like, oh, here we are. Yeah. Everyone has had the opportunity, right, to learn to have a good attitude. So the Lord has given you that precious opportunity to come underneath in the proper ways. All right. So here we are, not with external service. So this has to be sincere. It isn't only to make a show, not with eye service. That is when their eye is on you. And the word, of course, that if external service would be without a desire to please the Lord, right? You might even want to please your external. That's the idea. You want to please your employer so you only do what is good when he's watching you. And so if you're doing that, then you aren't seeking to please the Lord. It says, as those, I love this, who merely please men. Well, with man pleasingness is how it is. And the word merely there is added because of the contrast, right? You have you have God whom you're supposed to be honoring and pleasing, or you're going to reduce yourself to just pleasing men. And the idea of how paltry that is. I mean, really, that's the highest you're going to get. And if you think about that, it really kind of changes the whole idea, which is, yeah, why would I just want to be pleasing men? I have the precious opportunity to please and honor the God of the universe. And that's a much greater thing. So that enables you to look right through the difficult person that you're serving. You know what? I really wouldn't have any natural desire to want to please this person. And then there's a sense in which, in comparison with God, I shouldn't. I want to please the Lord. And I can look right past them, the difficult person, and say, this honors the Lord, to then act in a way or work in a way that will be pleasing to this person. But I do that all the time. I do that regardless of who is there. So yeah, it indicates the lesser value of the service in one sense. You're serving men. I mean, come on. but if you want to serve the Lord, then you ought to be sincere. And unbelievers, if you really think about it, what, they can only perform my service. I mean, that's all they really can do, because they're either pleasing themselves or they're pleasing, you know, the employer. And even if they work hard at other times, they never were pleasing the Lord. An unbeliever's not pleasing the Lord. He's always pleasing somebody, but it's not God. And so even a super hard worker that is not a believer is only pleasing himself or the employer, one of the two. Or he has some other motivation for working hard when the boss is not around. But it really is true. I think you've experienced it. I mean, in the vast majority of cases, people are not working hard when the boss is not around. However that works, you know, these days you're working from home or you're working, they're not. There's a whole series of things that people are not doing consistently. Insincere service dictates or indicates what? A fear of men. Galatians 1:10, Paul said, "Am I now seeking the favor of men or of God? Am I striving to please men? If I were trying to please men, what, I wouldn't be a bondservant of Christ." That's the whole idea. Anytime I'm trying to please men, I'm coming out from underneath my service of Christ to please them. And what's the picture of that? That's crazy. That's insane that you would come out from underneath the best possible master to serve these other masters. Don't do that. Get back underneath Christ. Which means, of course, that you're going to be back underneath those masters that you have. But it's going to be in a profitable way. 1 Thessalonians 2:4, just as we've been approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel, so we speak not as pleasing men, but God who does what? Who examines our hearts. Ongoing work that God is doing. Why are you doing this? What are you doing? What is your heart, your inner man, mind, will, affections, conscience? What is it like? And if you want to evaluate your performance all throughout the day, and then at the end of the day, that's what you're thinking. God was examining my heart all day long. Because he never stops. My other employer had no idea what was going on in my heart. None. They don't know. I mean, some, because they can see, you know, how we're expressing ourselves indicates the heart. But you guys, God always knew. Now, the beauty of that, there is a negative aspect to that, right? God knows when I was dishonoring him. But think about this. He also knew every time when you were doing what you did at work to please him, and he never forgets it. So let's not only go to the negative here. You have an opportunity to actually bring pleasure to the heart of God all throughout the day if your heart is properly directed towards the Lord when you're in difficult work circumstances. So you're actually been given this precious opportunity to bring pleasure to the heart of God, to honor him, and to find your satisfaction in him. And in fact, the worse the boss gets, in one sense, the better opportunity you have to do that and to please him and honor him. Because that's a joy to me, to think through. I want to be properly, yes, negatively directed. I don't want to dishonor the Lord, but I do want to bring him pleasure. And every bit of hard work that I do that is for the Lord is honoring to the Lord.
That part is also true if you're the leader.
Yes.
I mean, a lot of times people that are under you are not going to be happy with what you're doing.
Right.
If they have a right heart.
Again.
And I think we always need to be sensitive about that.
Right, you're not just, I could care less what you think. But again, it's pretty much the same thing, right? It's if an employer's coming down on you and you're trying to please the Lord, you're just like, I'm just going to please the Lord. If the employees hate you and you're just trying to please the Lord, right, that is the thing that really matters. And you want to listen. Sure, you want to listen and pay attention. But those things drive both ends of the spectrum.
To that point, I am a manager of people.
Right.
I have a manager that I report into.
Right.
But to role model to my people, the fact that I'm going to submit to this guy, even though sometimes we don't agree,
yep,
our theology obviously doesn't line up in a lot of different places, but yet I tell my people he's been placed over me, so therefore I submit to what he commands me to do, right? Out of a demonstration to them that I know behind my back you guys probably...
Exactly, because if you're not showing that to them, you're building your own destruction. That's what you are doing. You are breeding, that's how he acts. So we'll be working to get this guy out of the way, right? You're setting up your own execution. By refusing to honor the person above you, you are setting a pattern.
I had a boss that told me that. He said, these hard decisions, you tell them to me.
That's right.
And it took a lot off of it.
That's right. Okay, I'll do it. And you guys, again, you are setting the proper example. Again, remember, so this works all the way through, both at work you're doing that, and then for the people you're disciple, you're doing that, for the people in the church you're doing that. Everybody's, and when you, how you talk, think about this, how you sit around and talk about your work or the work that you used to. Do you have a hand up? Yes, go.
Getting that point across to this group is a piece of cake.
Sure. But that's just about to be my point. You guys got that all down, right? You've never struggled with that, and you're not still struggling with it. Well, some of you are like, hey, I'm retired. Well, yeah, you've got other things that you need to be doing, work that you need to be about, but you are to be communicating this continually. So this, I'm building, if you do really, in many ways, you've worked through this, you're many years, you're doing well at this, great, but you need to now press this down into the church, because I've got all these young men who don't understand this well, and we're pressing it there as we try to speak to them and teach them, but they need to see you do this. And because when you're just sitting around talking about your work or talking about your career, your stories, you need to have the right attitude as you're doing that.
I'm absolutely not trying to point this at anybody in this room, but how about coming back to the elders of the church when something happens? I mean, anybody, unless you've been under a rock, mm-hmm. there have been a lot of people that have not been going to bat for our elders and for mm-hmm. the leaders of our church.
Yeah.
And they are setting the seeds of their own destruction as well.
Yeah, right.
That's what's happening. I mean, they're doing that. And so what the next place they go, and then everybody's seeing that, and they might be, oh, yeah, yeah. But, I mean...
But we need to call that out.
Right.
If we just sit and listen, right. then that's not right either. And when they do that, we
right.
need to call them out.
And you've got to be careful. But you would do the same at work. You should, which is what you're... No, we are here to do what they say. So, yes, those things are true.
And you know, and it's not... But you don't have to agree. I mean, you know, the whole discussion we had a little while about raising the hands.
Right.
You and I probably aren't exactly on the same page,
right.
but you're my elder.
Right.
And you've thought through this stuff.
Right.
And I've got to respect that, and I've got to... If somebody comes to me and says, oh, Christian never raised his hands. Look, man, Chris is... He's got a responsibility. He's thinking right. through these things. I got to come to you know, come...
Absolutely.
For you.
Support is not agreement. It's not. It doesn't mean, because I support you, doesn't mean I agree with everything you've done or everything you've said. It means that, right, that's the position. And so we're going to come underneath it. Because if it did, right, you couldn't do any of this. And so if it meant that I agree with them about everything, I actually don't. But, right, I've chosen to come underneath this because of the nature of what this is like. And I do think, that the other thing about that is if you're on the other side of that, when you're working your way down, right, if support has to mean you agree with me on everything, that's why you have, if we're talking the church, a doctrinal statement, this range of things we're doing, or at work, it's a similar thing. If you force all of your employees to actually agree with everything you do, that was the greatest thing in the world. You are so good. You've just created puppets. That's all you've done. And they don't believe that anyway. but you say, no, okay, we disagree. I got that. But this is what we're going to do. Thank you. And after you've heard it. And they have a choice to make. But what also happens over time when you do that is you start listening as well. And you're particularly in a work context, you're like, ooh, okay, that guy had a great idea. This happens with my wife all the time. She tells me certain things, and I'm like, okay, great, we're doing it this way. And then I do it this way, and I'm like, I should have done it that way. This happened yesterday. We're cooking shish kebabs. Very simple. She goes, you should put all this in a pan, put them on the grill, cook all the shish kebabs so you cook all the meat, and then let everybody make their shish kebab from that. No, it's more fun to put it on the little stick. It's a little thing. And half of them are uncooked because I couldn't get them on and off the right time. And she was very gracious. And we finished up. It's like 10 at night.
She remembers.
And we're putting stuff away. No, actually, I did in this case. But I was like, hon, yeah, they're right. She's like, I know. I mean, it wasn't I told you so. It was just like, I know. And I was like, okay, so next time we do this, this is what we're going to do. And I think as we learn how to work in these things, those are the kinds of things that happen. Here, sincerity of heart, singleness of heart, without folds, no place to hide. It's a great picture. You can't hide anything.
You know, the golden rule is in the workplace.
No.
He has the
gold rules. Makes the rules. He has the gold, makes the rules. But our goal is to give ourselves fully and completely to the Lord, because you can't serve actually two masters. You really can't serve that underneath master. You have to serve the Lord, and then you can actually properly honor that person. And a sincerity of heart is something you got to constantly check again. It's not you can't put that on autopilot, because it's something that's directed. It's a little like your worship. It's the same thing. You can't put it on autopilot. It needs to be a constant direction of your heart. And I find if I don't do that I can spend all day working. And it wasn't necessarily honoring the Lord. I wasn't thinking through that and carefully pursuing that. And when I don't, it's not the same thing. It's just not the same. It's like singing without thinking about it. Okay, I did something. That was better than nothing, probably. But I don't think it was actively honoring the Lord the way that it could, because it wasn't constantly on my mind. And I think those are the kinds of things that when the Spirit of God is strengthening our inner man, He enables us to do that, which is I can both do my work and think about how this is pleasing the Lord. And I can constantly be recalibrating my heart, really kind of moment by moment throughout the day, even in the midst of a very busy, very intense day. Some of you guys have work that's like, there's not a lot of extra mental time. You're not just sitting around, you know, what do I want to think about today? You got decisions to make, your but the beauty of the power of the Spirit of God working in our inner man is that we can be aware of those things and ever increasingly need to be. That's maturity, where you're halfway through the day and you know how much of your day you spent honoring the Lord. You could go kind of do a mental calibration on that. No, I was thinking about the Lord the whole time. And this starts really what? The moment you get out of bed, really the moment your eyes snap open is where you begin working your way through. I'm to please the Lord today. I want to honor the Lord today. He's my master today. And it just starts to begin all throughout. It's a lot of work, but that's why you have the great power of God. If we had wimpy people, yeah, if this was all you, you're like, you got to take a break. You're going to only do so much of that. My mental energy is expended. Well, not by the Spirit of God it isn't. It's constantly renewed, which is the great danger of, again, somehow thinking that the Spirit of God will do something apart from your inner man. He's going to poof. He's going to zap something in there. No, he's working through it. And so if you give up, you're like, I'm just too tired now. The Spirit will take over. No, he won't. The flesh will take over because he's working through your inner man. That's what's happening. And particularly at work, this is draining to constantly be redirecting your thoughts back to the Lord in the midst of a very busy day, trying to work through things. And yet if you don't, you're going to make mistakes. You're going to make bad decisions. You're going to dishonor the Lord with your attitude. And you're going to do that anyway. But you guys, this becomes, and the mature Christian worker, he's a rare breed. Very rare, where all throughout the day, the attitude is kind and calm. And yet these people exist. And when they do, it's a powerful thing. Which is why men sitting at home, and I'm not talking about being retired, that's a different deal. When they ought to be working and out in the workplace and not setting these kinds of examples, we abandon the workplace to pagans. And one of the primary means by which God is honored by men is in your workplace. We need to build a strong workforce, not a strong group of men who are going to hang out at home. Again, you might work for, there's a whole series of things, but you guys, that is not what clearly is how Scripture was designed for men to be. The man's in the gate. If you want Proverbs 31, you got this powerful woman doing all these things to direct the home because the man is well-respected in the gate. He should be well respected at home. I got that. But she's supporting and encouraging him and we're gonna so that he can exert a godly Christian influence in the world. And when that doesn't happen, the whole world starts to crumble. That's what happens. And it's happened in America. And Christians, unfortunately, if you've read, kind of worked your whole way through with the Benedict Option book, which is we just need to pull back from society and culture now because we lost. We lost. It's over. Well, great. That's wonderful. Throw up your hands and say, no, this is why you're here in culture. We never won. That was the problem. If you think you won, that was our problem. See, America, good Christian country, we won. Oh, now we've lost. There's gay marriage and there's, all these things, transgender this, because that's wicked stuff. This is your time to shine. This is when you are to demonstrate to the world the greatness of God in the midst of this, not retreat from it because we lost the culture war. It wasn't ours to win in that sense, and we were to represent Christ. Now's the time. Think about our young people. We are preparing them to propel them out into the world. It could be full-time missionary. That's great. That's in the world. If you think my friend Mark Scarborough and what are the names? Greg and Beth Burnett working in the workplace there. You think they're somehow hiding? I mean, they are at it. They're full at it. And we'll guess, but every one of them, we want to launch our kids out then who say, look, I'm not going into full-time missions. Why? Because I'm going into a career. This seems to be what the Lord has given me to do, and I'm going to honor the Lord in it, not to make $1 billion, but because I want to please him. I mean, think of the challenges they're facing. But if we're telling them, hide, run away, get your family and go hide in the mountains, guys, that's not helpful to the culture. We're going to pack it. That's like bad dispensationalism, right? And yet it's now coming through amillennialism, through covenant theology. We're going to go hide because I'm going to wrap myself around my covenant family and we're going to protect ourselves until Christ returns. It's like, bad dispensationalism tried that, which is shut everything down and let the Lord return. No, be active. Get to work because that's what you do until Christ returns. So you can err on either side of theology here and you end up in trouble. And it's fascinating to me that that's what happened.
I've been reading and reconsidering a lot of older books, Fit Bodies, Fat Minds, and, The Scandal of the American Mind.
Osgin.
How Then Shall We Live?
Right.
This issue of that we have in some ways lost the battle, but that means we need to
get in it.
Well, I'm going to go to a Christian career. No, you're going to go to a career as a Christian.
That's right. There's
you always need to put that as right. a Christian, because that's going to be your ministry.
That's the most important thing. And when people say things like, you know, I'm, and this often happens in media, music and stuff like that. Band says, we don't want to be known as a Christian band. We want to be a band. We just happen to be Christians. Sorry. You are Christians. You just happen to be a band. I mean, that just happened to be that. If your identity is in this thing you do as opposed to being a Christian, you're done. You're already over. It's already over.
But if I say I've been going to a Christian career, they think, oh, ministry, mission,
that's right.
What?
You know? No. Everything is a Christian career. Right, because you're a Christian.
Idea.
Absolutely. I am a Christian physicist. I am a Christian ditch digger. That is what I do. It is first and foremost. And all your work ought to be good. But you're doing it as unto the Lord. Because and helping our young people, helping our college students and our and our young men who are just kind of starting out and trying to figure out, what do I do and how do I get going in my career? And they're starting to think about just themselves, and they're making bad decisions on the basis of, it's rampant out there, and it's in our church. You, many of you, are the ones who need to be reaching down to say, no, come over to my house. Let's talk about how you get started in a career and how you do that to honor the Lord, and how you're not selfish and you sacrifice your wife and your children at that altar or whatever it might be. Because this, just coming from the pulpit is not sufficient. Or coming here, that's why you guys are here. Some of you, you're in this state and you're like, okay, I'm learning how to do that. Some of you are, I've learned how to do that. Thanks for the encouragement. Now go tell somebody else how to do that.
Just sharing this whole idea about representing Christ in the culture, and about, you know, what is your career, and are you going to be a physicist that's a Christian, or a Christian physicist? What comes first?
Right.
You know, that sort of thing. It actually transcends the workplace into things that are a lot more fundamental. One of the challenges that I have is interacting with black folk as a Christian.
Right.
And, you know, there are folk who say, well, I'm a black man, so da-da-da-da.
Right.
And I go, wait a minute, I'm a Christian.
That's right, it's first.
And da-da-da-da, you know, and so, you know, what are you, and I look at some of my brethren, and I challenged him, and I said, what are you first? Are you a black man, or are you a Christian?
Yep.
And they're in a quandary, because they do not know how to handle it. That quandary is gone once you understand you really are a Christian first.
And everything
and
flows from that.
And changes right. The whole perspective of how you live your life.
And you are right, and that is much more fundamental, right? And the very basic issues of race and all of those things. And everything, we are Christians first. And it transcends all. It does transcend race. It does. It has to. If it doesn't, then you're not. Then you don't know what it means to be a Christian. It has its own culture. It has its own everything. And we obey the word, whether we're, you know. And all, so it's an excellent point. If it doesn't start there with everything, it's not going to flow into the workplace. And it's you're going to be lost, because you're going to try to figure out. That's the... It's why it is so deadly what our culture is doing, where everything, you are trying to determine who you are at any given moment, and it shifts and flows with whatever the culture is doing. We're destroying, of course, a generation, because there's no fundamental, I'm not anyone. But if I'm trying to, well, we'll put it this way, if you determine who you are, you're nothing. You're nothing, because you don't know, and it gets back and forth, and you get lost within yourself. If God determines who you are, that's everything. He's everything. And we are just, and even when you had kind of a moral framework, that was better, because at least you knew, I'm supposed to be this, at least. You had a picture shooting for, now you're not supposed to be anything. And so therefore, again, you become nothing. You're totally confused all the time. And you have a whole generation, again, the things we need to understand. I'm always pressing this down, because it's easy for us to some degree to kind of sit in judgment on this generation, all these millennials, and all the jokes that we make and things that we do. And I do that to some degree. because I'm working with you. This, the church is, we're working and building. We don't want that generation. And so, right, just making fun of it, you know, mic drop, you know, dumb millennials who play video games in their basement. And I've been guilty of that. But that doesn't help them because they are the way they are. They're making their choices. I got that. But they need someone to show them why that isn't the case. And, you know, a bunch of crusty old guys sitting around and saying why you shouldn't be that way, instead of working our way down to say, let's work on how you can become something different, which is a Christian, not me, right? I want you to be me. No, I want you to love the Lord Jesus. Let me hopefully show you how he flows through the cracks of my earthen vessel. But he has that. It's a full-bodied work. It's a full church work that we're trying to do. So for you and for each one. So, you know, the idea, with sincerity of heart, fearing the Lord. Right, that's a sincere heart. It's the only sincere, truly sincere heart is a heart that has a reverential, delightful, dreadful, consuming, reverential awe of God. That's the fear of the Lord. And it's a constant attitude. We're working through a book with the teens, very purposely, Jerry Bridges, The Joy of Fearing God. 14 chapters, meaty, weighty chapters as we work their way through. And I've got seventh graders in there underlining their books going, they learned something. I mean, they read a good book. They read a meaty, weighty book, and they learned a little. And then my seniors learned a lot. But the same thing, just drawing them towards this whole concept of what it means to truly fear the Lord. And that's the only thing that enables us to overcome the fear of man. And the fear of the Lord is 2 Corinthians 5:10. We all must appear before the judgment seat of Christ. And that's a portion of it, right? Well, God doesn't judge me. He definitely judges you. He doesn't punish you. He judges you all the time. And there will be a judgment where you stand before him as a Christian, and he will evaluate every single thing you've done. I think we've talked about this here. Maybe it's with my teens. I don't think it means, you know, you got the chick tracks. We'll say, you know, you stand before a guy who puts the video screen, everybody's watching. Maybe, I don't know. But it would seem to me that at least you are going to be aware. At least you are going to know. And that evaluation, however long or short it takes, it appears to me you are the party to that. And you're going to look and say, ooh, how much of that was wood, hay, stubble? How much of that was gold, silver, precious stones? And that ought to drive you. Why? Out of joy. Because this whole idea, we'll barely get there, probably won't get this morning, that at the end of this, we'll probably get there in just a minute, is that you do this knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance. It's the Lord Christ whom you serve. So there's negative. He who does wrong will receive the consequences of the wrong that he has done. That's that last verse kind of... But yes, there's a positive. I want to be when I stand before the Lord, I want to have demonstrated his value by having pleased him with the good work that was done, because the only thing that actually remains there were things that were done for him. Anything done for you is gone anyway. Like, so I might get selfish if I want a reward. Well, if it's just for you, it's gone. But if the reward, as it were to please and honor your Savior, that's going to stay. And that's going to be a testimony to whose greatness? Yours? No. His? Yes. So thinking through all those things properly is huge. And the end judgment is not only that there is a punitive judgment for unbelievers. They're done. For you, there's a judgment which drives you towards a desire to stand before God having given a good account for what he gave you. Because it dishonors the master when you do not use wisely what he has provided you. Yes?
I don't know if you have a plan to get to this later, but it's also important to remember that your relaxation, your hobbies, your hunting or golf or whatever should be done for the Lord.
Again, everything. And so, yeah, this, I mean, focus here on work directly, but there isn't anything in your life that should be, everything could be gold, silver, precious stones. Everything could be that. Right. So it's not right. It's not just working. I'm listening to a book called Reset by David Murray. It was like on all of the lists last year as the primary book to read. And it's about how to keep your life properly structured so you don't burn out is the term that's often used. And it's so far, it seems to be a really good book. So some of you, sure, probably should pick it up because I don't know this for sure, but your life's maybe out of balance. And yet other parts of it are, in one sense, it's just really very basic. Everything you do is to be pleasing and honoring the Lord. If you get focused, overly focused on one particular thing, particularly for your own glory, you're dead. And if you're driven improperly, not by grace and the truths of Scripture, but by your own desires or by the expectations of others, then you're not going to please the Lord at all. And that's fundamental here, that we have a fear of the Lord because that's the ultimate fear. We should fear only the, and you know, Matthew 10:28 gives us this. Do not fear those who kill the body, but are unable to kill the soul. Rather fear him who is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. I mean, that's fundamental. And that's God, not Satan. He's the one that has control of the soul. So why wouldn't you honor him? Again, this is what's so crazy about the world saying, you ought to honor me. You ought to honor the person who has no control over your soul. And by the way, Satan has no control, right? He has no control over your soul. He can do all that he can to try to keep souls blinded, but he doesn't control their soul. That destiny is already created by God. He knows. So he's not the ultimate authority. When you fear men, you will sometimes please men and never please God. When you fear God, you will sometimes please men, but you will always please God. What's better? Okay? I mean, there you got it. Yeah, when you fear the Lord, everyone's not going to think you're wonderful. But you know what? You've got a lot better shot that more people are, if you really want to think about it that way. Particularly in work. In general, a hard-working, honest employee is going to receive the better end of the deal. In general, not always. I get that. There are workplaces that are wicked, and you do what's good and right, boom, you are out. That happens. In general, though, the one who works hard and has the boss's back, he wants to keep you around. And even if he's wicked, and it's a wicked workplace, think Daniel. You want a wicked workplace? Can you imagine that what we see in Daniel 6 was the only time people tried to get rid of him? I would think not. Under Nebuchadnezzar, I bet this happening all the time. If anybody was supportive of the regime in power and someone else wanted some power, they're coming for you. I mean, he did an amazing job of making it all the way through because they wanted him around. Because he did a good job. What amazes me, if you want a workplace resume, Daniel chapter 6 says what? When the new regime came in, and they looked back at all the records that they keep, and they kept copious records. I mean, when the king would say anything, someone was there with a pen. He's sleeping at night. And he wants to talk to Haman. This is Ahasuerus. He wants to talk to Haman. And so the recorder's there. Bring out the book. So the guy's poop pops out. You know, ding. Okay, I'm here, I got the book. Goes through. They recorded everything. And so they go back looking at all of Daniel's career, 60 years maybe, 70 years, trying to find one thing where he wasn't properly, that they could actually find deceit or something, the kinds of things they did all the time. They couldn't find one. I mean, can you imagine looking back at your work records? Somebody opened those things up, all your time on the computer, all the other stuff you've done, and everything that was done there. Daniel wasn't perfect. We know that. I'm sure he did do things that were wrong. None of that got in the annals because of the nature of how good his work was. Those are the kinds of things we want. And when we do that, we are able to honor the Lord. And in general, what did Jesus do? He increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and men. That's what you want. You're not a man pleaser. You increase in favor with God. That's first. When you do that, in general, you increase in favor with men. Even in wicked governments, you tend to do that. Wholeheartedly. All right, so whatever you do, do your work heartily. It's a great word, out of soul. It comes from your inner man, right? You're doing it because you really want to do it. And of course, it's related directly to our worship discussion yesterday. Work that is done heartily looks different than work that is done half-heartedly, both in effect and in presentation. Okay, it just does. You and I both know that, and you can watch someone working even externally for a period of time, particularly if it's manual labor. It's very clear. If it's not manual, it's harder to see. You know, how fast you type on the computer is not necessarily how wholeheartedly you are. But you'll know by the way the time is used, by the productiveness that comes out of that, how wholeheartedly the work is. And so this idea of doing it out of soul indicates that your mind, your will, your affections, and your conscience are all operating to the purpose of accomplishing that one task. And you're not half-souled. You're not divided. And I won't take the time here to talk about distractions that you purposely introduce into your workplace that really make you half-hearted. Music can be one of those. I'm just going, I love listening to music. I'm going to please myself. Well, you're probably cutting your work, your ability to work well in about a third because you're focusing on the music and you're trying to type in your computer I would say any external distraction is actually limiting your ability to be effective. And you got to be really careful with that. Manual labor is a little different. I mean, you can manual labor all day long with a music blasting. I think that's a different deal. But mental work with other kinds of distractions, you are reducing your effectiveness. And you need to be very careful of that. And I'm switching to my email. I'm looking at my thing. I'm doing this. You're stealing time from your employer. Because you're not doing that. I've got to be very careful here. My employer's not looking over my shoulder. And that, a lot of you, that's the case. That no one's looking over your shoulder to know. And you're the employer to some degree. Guys, you're still stealing time. You got to be really careful. Because when you're multitasking, as it were, which we can now, you know, what we call that, is you're usually just being distracted. So that's kind of an aside, and you just take that as best, seems best to you. But you want to be really careful that you're not throwing stuff in. You're not doing it heartily. The whole inner man is not engaged in that work. You got whole other pieces that are doing other things, and you're distracted. Even when you're thinking through and you're ruminating over this, you know, this thing that's happening at home and these other things, there's a time for that and there's time not for that. There's a time to think carefully through what's going on with your wife and your family, and it's not necessarily when you're supposed to be focused carefully on that business deal. Wholeheartedly seeking to honor the Lord, all of your attention, all of your faculties directed so that you're not distracted. And that's a hard thing. You're never stopping thinking about the Lord. That's not multitasking. That's the one thing that directs everything. But if you're constantly distracted, then you're stealing time and you're not wholehearted.
When I develop my lessons, and I usually do it in the morning, you know, like 5 o'clock, mm-hmm. and I can do them in 2.5, 3.5 hours. If I have a TV on, it'll be 8 or 10 hours.
Yeah. I mean, it's just the way that it works. And so,
if I'm not listening.
No, absolutely. I mean, the so-called noise that we have in the background is affecting your mind. Because you're switching. You are paying attention to it. My mind is incredible. I can switch back and forth. Any switching off is a moment that you're not on. And I, you know, you can take that and work through that and think through that, but you do need to think it through. Wholeheartedly, I think, is an important concept. I am entirely directed towards this effort as I am supposed to be doing that. And then when I come home, think about it that way. The goal is I'm wholeheartedly working for my family. And I'm not, maybe for some of you that's more important, I'm not distracted on the other end. Where am I constantly, I'm multitasking at home. I'm constantly thinking about these things. Again, there might be certain aspects of what you do that require that. At some levels, but mostly I'm here with you. My kids have to know that. I mean, I could be mentally distracted all the time. There's always something on my heart and mind, always something to be thinking about, always a hard situation. And if my kids constantly feel like I'm only half there, either with my pleasure or with my work, then they learn to hate my work, or they learn to hate my pleasure, or they learn to imitate my pleasure or imitate how I work in ways that are inappropriate. And it's so hard to do that. And that's what we're trying to do. Because remember, yeah, work isn't only at the workplace. Work is whatever sphere of energy you're supposed to be exerting at that given moment. Our idea of work was energy exerted. Just depends on where, it's at. A lot of this is workplace. Love Hezekiah. Every work which he began in the service of the house of God and in the law and commandments, seeking his God, he did with all his heart, and he prospered. I engaged in it completely and totally. Ecclesiastes 9:10. Whatever your hand finds you to do, do it. Whatever your hand finds you to do it with all your might. For there is no activity or planning or knowledge or wisdom in Sheol where you're going. Just make a conscious. When you die, you can't be productive in your work here. So just remember that. This is the only shot you get when it comes to that, the earthly view of your work. You don't get to do this work when you die. There's other things that will happen. Wholeheartedness indicates a true love of those we serve. We serve out of a desire, we'll end here, for the good of our master. Whoever that might be, because you really there's a true good that you are supposed to be driving towards. Good of our Lord, but you want to be a blessing and a benefit and to all of those around you. Because it says in Ephesians 6, I love this, with good will render service as to the Lord. That is goodwill. Certainly, I mean, you want to honor the Lord, but that's already been set. You're supposed to fear the Lord. It's with goodwill toward that man. Goodwill towards those around you. You want their very best, and doing your best job does that. Regardless of their response, regardless of who they are, with goodwill, not with a bad attitude. That's essentially, that would be the opposite of goodwill, bad attitude. When your kids are working around the house and they got a bad attitude, what do you tell them? Change the attitude. I mean, you're getting work done, but I mean, everybody's miserable and you're not honoring the Lord. Imagine if bosses just walked around the workplace, change the attitude. You can't tell me to do that. You know my dad. I mean, he knows you're destroyed. He knows you're harming the workplace. Right? He knows that that's not a good thing. And that people rarely do that these days, but in a well-run workplace, people will tell you that kind of thing. That's a bad attitude. You're harming everybody here. Well, I'm having a really bad day. I get that. You need to learn how to mentally direct your energies away from that bad day, because we're all suffering as a result of that. Works the same for you. And again, think back to your family. You can't afford to have a bad day. You're like, what? That is, you have to learn how to take that to the Lord. He knows your despair. He knows your difficulty. He knows your struggles. And yes, there's time to back away and be with him. But you can't ruin everyone else's time when you're not. We don't have goodwill. You're supposed to be thinking carefully. Don't come to church without goodwill towards everybody here. I mean, come to church. Change it. Work through it. But so often what happens, people are in totally distracted, constantly riled up with the sin that they're involved in or things they're not working on. And so they don't come with goodwill. And you enter into your workplace the same way. It's like, well, it's the workplace. So maybe you're more, maybe you work a lot harder at church. You know, I want to enter with goodwill. Guys, in your secular workplace, goodwill. You can't, it's not, this is where I can have a bad attitude. Because you're impacting everyone. So let's kind of end there. And think through, maybe the practical, the takeaway here for today is this idea of goodwill, with goodwill rendering service, that you would be thinking, am I doing this because I really want to care for these people? I want to love them. Whether my enemies, what does the Bible say? Love your enemy. Care for them, goodwill towards them. So maybe it's your family that you need more goodwill. You need to be thinking carefully about their benefit and not being distracted. Maybe it's this idea of being distracted and not giving full effort in each thing that you're doing, a wholehearted effort. I mean, I understand switching from thing to thing throughout the day. You have to do that, right? But be careful of being distracted throughout the day. That's a different thing. And so maybe that you would think through those things. That we might, and I guess the last thing, you should be thinking in your mind now, who am I going to encourage with this? If you are doing well with this, which I hope that each one of you are, who am I going to encourage with that? Another man could be here, but probably it needs to be outside this group where you're reaching down to say, hey, let's go out for lunch. And let's get together. Let's talk about work. Work. Be a good thing. Let's pray. Thank you, Lord, for your goodness. Thank you that you are always working, that your work is wholehearted, that it is perfect, that it is always properly directed, that it is with goodwill towards us. And I pray that we would render with goodwill our service to men out of desire to please you. In your precious name, amen.